Hey, drama listeners. It's the summer of drama. Oh my God, remember the summer of drama? I think it was summer, maybe it was summer 2021 or maybe it was summer 2022. I think it was 21, where Connor and I, we like branded this whole thing as summer of drama. We sold like fun merch. Anyways, it's always the summer of drama, and we're continuing to bring you incredible episodes. We had a relaxing summer break last week, in which Connor and I recorded multiple episodes of the podcast that you'll be hearing very soon, including this fabulous episode with Natasha Hodgson, who is one of the stars, writers, producers, all of the above of Operation Mincemeat. Everyone calls her Tosh or Tash. We get into it. And it was honestly so much fun. It was one of those podcasts where I called Connor afterwards and I said, I could have gone for another 20 minutes. That was amazing. If you haven't seen Operation Mincemeat yet, it's at least running through February. Definitely try and see it. It's hysterical. And we talk a lot about it in this specific podcast. We also talk about a lot of other topics, as always, a lot about comedy, the dynamic of working with others in a group, aka twin podcasters, or being four people who write musicals together, and so much more. It's honestly a blast to keep the summer of drama being, a fall of drama, winter, spring. Consider contributing to our Patreon, which is $5 a month. You'll get bonus episodes of Connor and I gabbing, chit-chatting about Broadway, Broadway tea, pop culture, movies. We always do like big reality TV check-ins, and it's honestly random and fun. And that's part of what the $5 a month gets you, as well as you're added to our Instagram close friends. So we're so thankful for everyone who's already a part of that community. And I know it is a lot to ask in this recession indicating times. It really does mean a lot and goes a long way. Please enjoy this episode. And of course, stay tuned because we have so many fun surprises, incredible gaggy guests coming up, including this one with Tosh. All right, let's get on with the show.
Press play, curtain up and now we're in. It's time to take a spin.
With shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nominated?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
It's mid-July. It's hot as hell outside. It does feel like summer.
I don't know if I'm always like internally running on like a school year clock. I mean, especially like working at a university now, like it feels like the midway point of summer. I always think summer's over. Summer's
I
over. It's almost time for school to start again, even though I'm literally not in school. Regardless, there was something exciting that happened this week that we need to talk about really quick.
Love
And we'll
Island
probably
ended.
dive into
Oh.
more. Love Island ended. Yeah, that is one thing. But no, the Emmy nominations came out, and we'll dive into it more probably on Drama Plus. For those of you who are following along, it's our Patreon platform.
Period.
But I just want to know, we don't have time to cover a lot of it because I want to get to our guests, but I just want to know, was there any snub that you're still steaming over?
Well, yes, I'm feeling dramatic about one thing, which is that I feel like there's so much TV now. Obviously, there's so much product that nominators, voters, whatever, have to just focus on a few projects. But it kind of bums me out when all the categories are like two TV shows. And it's not to say I don't
I
love those
know.
shows, but it's like, okay, Severance and White Lotus for like most things, which of course, love those shows. There's hundreds of new shows every year that just can't get recognized or whatever because there's too much for them to decide on, I think. So they just like pick five and they're like, okay, we're gonna nominate like everyone
Yeah.
from these categories. That being said, there was one more White Lotus nomination I wanted to see.
Okay.
You know me, whichever way the wind blows. Patrick Schwarzenegger, I thought was so good as
Yeah.
the older brother. And I thought he even got more to do than Jason Isaacs as his dad, who love him, love him, love him. Or even Sam Rockwell, who I didn't even feel like was in that much of the show. So I'm definitely bummed that Patrick wasn't nominated. What about you? Any snubs or.
Well, speaking about how there's too many shows and not enough that can get nominated. I know one of my favorite things this year was Black Doves with Keira Knightley, and that didn't get
Loved.
any
Oh
nominations
my
at
God, that
all.
show was so good.
But I don't know, would it have been limited series or is it coming back for another season? I don't know what the storyline. I mean, they could probably kind of continue it.
It was so good. It was like funnier than I thought it was going to be, too.
Yeah, maybe we should call for like a dramedy category because I feel like it could have fit in there. There was comedy and it did get pretty serious. I mean, there was some dark stuff. I mean, when you're dealing
Well,
with like government, end of the world. Oh my God, wait, there's literally like a tie-in with today's guest now that I'm thinking about it.
ooh, some
Because it's like British,
espionage.
that little British MI5 vibes going on. So,
Oh,
wait, do we have Keira
wow.
Knightley? Something even better today.
Someone better than Kira for sure. We've got a gaggy guest today. I'm going to read the intro and bring her in.
Please do.
But by the way, I do agree about Black Dogs. It deserved more. Okay. Anyway, y'all, our guest today is an award-winning writer, performer, producer, and star of Operation Mincemeat on Broadway. Her show won Best New Musical at the 2024 Olivier Awards and also saw her nominated for Best Actress in a Musical for originating the role of Ewan Montague and others. With her co-writers, Spitlip, she received 3 Tony Award nominations this season for her incredible work on Operation Mincemeat, as well as received countless accolades between New York City and London. The star is a part of the award-winning dark comedy theater troupe Kill the Beast and created and starred in her own critically acclaimed BBC scripted fiction series, The Sink, which was nominated for Best Podcast / Online Audio at the Audio Drama Awards 2021 and named one of the top 20 podcasts of 2020 by The Guardian. Other stage credits include Director's Cut, Don't Wake the Damp, He Had Hairy Hands, and The Boy Who Kicked Pigs. As a film and TV writer, she contributed to Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared, Netflix's Dogs in Space, and The Amazing World of Gumball and Bravest Warriors on Cartoon Network. She is as brilliant as she is hilarious, and we're so happy to have her with us today. Please welcome to Drama,
Natasha Hodson.
Hi. Oh my God, that was the longest bio. You did so well there. I was like, you're not boarding for drink. You're not like, you're out in the desert. I appreciate that so much. Thank you.
Oh my God. Coming from you.
I think you did really well with that, honestly. And can I just say, read Jason Isaacs versus Patrick. I'm completely with you. I love Jason in that series, but he did a lot of staring down the barrel of like a glass being like, my torments. That was basically his whole arc for that whole series, just like, let me be alone with my torments. I'm like, that the other guy's out there kissing his brother. Come on. Like,
I know.
I think the writing failed Jason a little bit because I think he peaked too soon with that if it would have happened later. But that's not his fault. But I agree with you.
It's not his fault. But hey.
And are you a Black Doves person?
Yeah, I watched. You know what? To my shame, I think I watched like most of Black Doves and then we moved here and then I had no time to do anything except my own Keira Knightley based, obviously, ablutions. But I thought it was everything I watched it was so good. Like everyone was like sort of sexy and moody. Like the action sequences were really great and it was like full of intrigue. But I have to say, I have not finished it. So that has to tell you, I wasn't so gripped that I was like, I gotta know how this ends. But maybe if I might go back to it now that you've said, like you've sort of reignited it in my mind.
Maybe the Emmy voters didn't finish it either. So maybe that's what happened.
You know, oh, that's it. I'm a voice of a nation, guys. That's it. Didn't get to the end.
But you were into White Lotus.
Yeah, I think in my, if I'm totally honest, I thought this season was probably like not my favorite of the seasons.
Yeah.
But it's really hard not to just be like, oh God, I just love being this horrible world full of horrible, beautiful people being like, oh God, why can't I murder someone at a spa?
I know.
What's your dream location for series 4?
Oh, I think they should go like tundra.
Ooh.
I think they should go like really like get psychologically fucked up in like the Antarctic, go like full like the thing, you know, like it's like a Arctic Ooh. Base. It's like a snow, maybe like a ski season.
Yeah.
And let's just have like, imagine the beautiful shots, like the red in the snow. Mike White, if you need me, I'm around. If you need a co-collab, just get me in there. Cause I think, imagine like all the beautiful stars in the like their fur and their skis and ugh. It'll be to die.
I'm ready. I feel like a snowy season of White Lotus is much needed. And also maybe he should add some writers to his staff. I think he does the whole thing himself.
Does he actually? I believe oh my God. So. Full respect. That is hard. As someone who writes most with other people, like other people are obviously incredibly annoying staff. Shout out to my collaborators. But my God, at least you're not doing it on your own. Like, oh God, I'm surprised you've not gone mad and murdered someone at his own spa. That much responsibility.
He's taking out his own aggressions by killing characters on the show. Yeah.
But he also, you know, he was the writer of the best film ever made, School of Rock. And so I think whatever you do after you do School of Rock, I will follow you to the end of the world because I think that's probably one of the films I've watched most in my entire life.
Do you have it memorized?
It's a perfect movie. I'm not going to say yes because that would be weird, but the answer is yes.
Yeah, I mean, right. Yeah. You know every comedic beat.
I know.
It's
every,
so good.
Every Dewey Finn like guitar hook, I am there. I just think it's a magical production, guys.
Yeah. Dewey's so monologue good. To the parents at the end of the movie about his experience with the children is one of my favorite. It's the funniest. Oh, dramatic irony moment that's ever happened. It's so good.
And one of the parents turns to the other and goes, your son is very skilled. Oh!
So good.
It's so good. It's magical. And also two of the kids in that actually got married. And I imagine this is now a podcast about the lore of School of Rock. I hope that's
Oh,
cool.
please, please.
But yeah, I follow them follow them on Instagram. Like the girl who's one of the backing singers, and I think the guy who played maybe the drums, not the drums, one of the others. I don't know what the guy who was like the bouncer, they got married in real life. So
Oh my goodness.
Mike White is responsible for more than just Emmy's happiness. He's responsible for true love.
That's
Wow.
beautiful. That's beautiful. I never saw the musical version of School of Rock.
No, to be fair, I haven't
Yeah.
either. But then I think that's because I'm like, but Dewey Finn is Jack
Yeah.
Black. Like,
Right.
I'm sure those guys who do it are doing an amazing job. But I'm sure it's the same with our show. You know, people who are really big fans of the real life Ewan Montague are
Right.
just like, listen, Ewan is my Ewan. I can't see this girl do
Well,
it.
I have to
It's just not
tell
gonna
you, I
work.
saw the show for the first time last week. So you've been months and months into your Broadway run here. I overheard three different conversations where people were saying it was their second or third time coming to the show. And if you haven't seen the movie yet, you have to watch the movie. It's so good. It's so good. And they're like, you're going to love this too. You're going to love this too. I'm not even kidding you.
That's so
I haven't had that
nice.
experience at a theater where I'm overhearing conversations about return visitors this early into a run.
Oh, that is so lovely. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a show we've obviously like worked, you know, we could not have worked harder. I'd love to say that we just, you know, what we just tossed this out. It was easy, but we could not have worked harder on this show. So I think when people kind of see how much we try and pack into it, and like every scene, you know, there's a million rhymes and jokes and little, you know, little surprises, just because when you get an opportunity like this, which is an opportunity we never thought we'd get, we really wanted to be like, we're going to put everything we have into every moment of it, and hopefully that, you know, it within that something will kind of jump out at you and stick, and you want to kind of come back and see what you might have missed the first time.
Yes. And there's so much to see. Dylan was just saying to me
Yeah.
before we hopped on, he's like, I've been re-listening to the cast recording. And he's like, there's so much that I missed. I need to go back and see the show again.
Yeah.
That you really do pack a ton in.
Yeah, it's super quick. Yeah, we pack it, and also because like the story is just so amazing. Like it's kind of a dual, you know, job for us in that the actual mission that it's based on is real life, and everything that we and every basically every single character within this show is based on a real person that existed and that contributed. And so we wanted to do justice to that, but also we wanted to make a kind of comedy. So we wanted to make sure it was funny and packed with jokes, but also we wanted it to be like emotionally resonant. So we wanted to make sure there were moments of like, you know, of real emotional vulnerability. So yeah, trying to get the balance between all of those things, whilst also making sure that I had a lot of solo moments as like an egotist, for sure, you know, making sure that, you know, I was being front and center, was like, yeah, it took years, you know.
Oh my goodness. Well, the final result, at least the result that we see on Broadway now, seriously is absolutely incredible. And so we're very grateful for all of that hard work.
Thank you.
I have questions about so many different things that you honestly just touched on. But before we get into any of that, Connor and I like to check in with all of our guests, meet you where you're at. Are you well, Natasha? Or as the fans call you, Tosh? Or is it Tash?
Tash. So in England it's Tash, because like in England my name is pronounced Natasha. Here people tend to go with either like Tosh or Tash or Natasha. Like it's that. So if anything, I'm having a personality crisis. I'm
Right.
having a kind of identity kind of bamboozlement for the pronunciation of my name. But no, apart from that, I'm good. I am sat in my lovely apartment. My dog and my boyfriend are in this apartment with me. My dog, who is a bigger dog, had to be so brave. He had to come over in the
Oh.
hold of the plane, which we were obviously like freaking, we
Yeah.
freaked out about. But then when we did it, and we were like, he's gonna be traumatized for life, he'll never forgive us. And he came out and he was like, ate his food, went to sleep. And we're like, yes, he's a dog.
You're
Yes, must remember they are not people, they have no ability to hold grudges.
Did you give him a trazodone or anything before he got into the hold or?
No. He was just, I think, you know what's so funny is like every American person that I tell this to, they're like, you drug the dog, right? You guys and your drugs.
Big
It's
pharma
so
prevails
real.
over here.
God bless America. No, it's great. They're just like, you know, that's it. Whereas in England, I think it works both ways, because like in England, they're like, I guess you just, I don't know what, hit him on the head and packed him in there with a like it's a much more, yeah, it's I like the way that your way is a lot more pain-free, but for us we're like, no, we can't ever have anything more than two paracetamol. That's if your arm gets chopped off, they're like, take an aspirin and good luck to you. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Is that the stiff upper lip mentality? Is that what that kind of is?
I think it's a stiff upper lip mentality combined with an incredibly overstretched public health service
There you
mentality.
go.
A real duo of endurance there. But no, yeah, so I'm having a good day.
Good.
Wait, I saw you went to Broadway Barks with your dog. He's
Yes.
so
He's the
cute.
best. His name is Sydney. He's a labradoodle. And yeah, I think Broadway Barks was probably my favorite thing that I've been to on Broadway so far. I think because I think it so exemplifies this weird little Broadway community, like that, in a way that I'm so in love with. It's just like they did it like Bernadette Peters, a goddess,
Yeah.
can just be like, you know what? We're going to put some dogs on the road and you're all going to come and we're going to get these dogs adopted. And the entirety of Broadway is like, yes, yes, indeed. It's like a school fete. It's like a teacher was just like, we're going to do this today. All get all the kids rounded up. And everyone's just like, yes, Bernadette, we will. Like, it's so like heartfelt and like so pure. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It's just like, and you just see all like, you know, I were in the room with like Jinx Monsoon and Cola Scholar, and like everyone's just there being like, so you got a dog? It's
That's
perfect.
magical. I
The
mean,
perfect event.
I love that you chose that over, say, the Tony Awards as your favorite
Hey,
thing.
listen, second place,
Yeah.
definite high second for performing at the Tonys. That was good too, but
Yeah,
really,
yeah.
you should have seen these dogs.
I'm sure. Oh my goodness. That's one of the few Broadway related events I feel like Connor and I have never been to, I would say. We just
No, I
did
can't.
Broadway Bears for the
Nice.
first time. That was like a first year, and we
Oh,
saw one of your
yes.
co-stars, Jack
Yes,
Mauve.
Jack was
Yes.
Dorothy, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. So
I mean, at this
funny.
point, I'm
Right.
guessing Jack is Dorothy in Wicked Part Two. They're teasing that Dorothy's going to be
He's
in it. So,
actually Dorothy in Operation Mincemeat, too.
oh,
He's just, he's the Dorothy of all
yeah.
our hearts.
There you go. Oh, that's so funny.
Do you feel like a lot of dogs were adopted at Broadway Barks?
Listen, I'm not on the email chain, so I don't know for sure, but there were certainly a lot of very intense cuddlings and a lot of serious eye contact happening. And we tried to convince our co-star Zoe, another one who wrote Operation Mincemeat, because she's on the brink of getting a dog. She's on the cliff at one strong breeze and she's falling into Dog Canyon, let me tell you. So I
Yeah.
was there being like, come on. And I know that she found that she liked, but she wasn't sure. So watch this space. We could have a new dog member of the Operation Mincemeat family if enough people barricade Zoe with messages such as like, please don't let that dog die horribly. Make sure the
Yeah.
dog doesn't, you know, is not alone for the rest of its life. So it's just a little mission for you guys if you want to take
Yeah, start
that
DMing Zoe listings of rescue pups
As
in the
vicious
area.
as possible. Yeah.
I feel like she'd never forget, like, during her Broadway run, I adopted this dog.
And
That's
like,
such a
what a
nice
great
little
story
marker.
being like, where did you get
Yeah.
little Pierre from? I got him from the mouth of Bernadette Peters. I
Right.
extracted him from the gullet of Broadway's baby itself. She's got to do it.
It's a good time marker too, because as the dog's growing up, you'd be like, oh wow, 5 years old. Oh my God, 5 years
Yes.
ago, I was in, that's so crazy. So, okay,
Yeah.
so looking back, you've already been in New York for what, 6 months, maybe a little bit less than
Yeah,
that?
we arrived here on the 1st of February, and with truly, truly no idea of how it was going to go. I think we had some confidence in that when we got to the West End, we really had no idea how it was going to go. And then the West End obviously went really well. But, you know, this is like the birthplace of musical theatre. This is like the home of musical theatre. Sorry, West End, but like this is like all of our sort of key musical writing inspirations really came from the USA and came from like the grand American songwriting tradition. And so we felt very like keenly that we were going to big school, we were like playing with the big boys, and we were very ready for the reaction to be like, well done. That was a lovely try. Thank you. That's quite enough from you. Go and try again. And so I think the fact that it is so different, and the fact that there's such a great amount of space here for so many different types of show to thrive. And I think this season, you know, I guess now the past season we would refer to it as, was just like such a like mind-bendingly amazing season. Like every type of show you could think of was here and was thriving. And you know, many of those shows are still running and some aren't, but like it just felt like such, I feel like we landed in like the most amazing, like I will never forget it. Like I will cherish being part of that like army of like creativity in so many different ways. Like, yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't know how you guys feel. You've obviously been around longer than me arriving in February, but like, did you feel similarly like this was a special season, or is that just me being like, oh, I'm a Brit in America, this is
No,
amazing?
you hit the nail on the head. Connor and I did
You
like
did.
a Tony's Awards recap like a month or I guess a month month ago, and we were talking about that, how it was our favorite season in recent memory, because there it was like a sampler platter of something for everyone, and it was so brilliant.
Yeah, something went wrong.
I feel like there were like true fan bases and fanatics for a lot of the shows that were on Broadway, like truly passionate people, like I said, who are going to see shows again and again, whether it be a revival of a show they loved forever and ever ago that's on Broadway for the first time, or a really different kind of production, or something original like yours, like that we've been waiting for from the West End, you know? So it was such an amazing year for sure. And you're part of it.
Yeah, we feel very, very lucky. I know. I feel incredibly lucky. And like, yeah, and now we get to sort of hopefully, you know, carry on through the summer and see what comes in the autumn, if as long as we get to, you know, if we get to stay here, which hopefully we will.
Yeah, because yeah. It was only supposed to run until like about now, right?
Originally? Yeah, I think originally it was supposed to run until maybe until June or something. I think it was wow. fairly cautious initial run. And now, yeah, we're now running super like deep into the year, I think. And yeah, I mean, I'll stay as long as you'll have me. But no, I think it's just, it's wonderful.
Please, 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 please. Yeah, I know that it's what, at least going to be February at this point.
Yes, yes.
I'm curious about something, because I remember my friend saw it on the West End like years before it came here. And he kept getting these emails, maybe because he had like an American email or something attached. And it was like, could Mincemeat happen on Broadway? Could it work? And there was a lot of like, almost like focus groups that were happening.
Yeah.
Are you privy to any of the information about like...
Oh yeah, absolutely. So the reason that happened is because actually I'll give you the drama on this.
Oh.
Is that, so quite early on in the West End run, it was like going well. And we were like, oh my God, maybe we could, you know, keep doing it here. And our producers were like, let's see, could we go to Broadway? And so they invited a bunch of Broadway producers to come and see it. And the universal opinion was that from these kind of big wig Broadway producers, they were like, this is a cute show, it's too British, it's just not going to work. So they passed on it, which absolutely fine. And that's kind of how we felt. And we were like bummed, but we're like, okay, whatever. And then as the run continued, we started to get reports from our sales team that we were getting more and more American audiences in. And it got to a point where it was like 15% of the audience in London was American. And so the sales team kind of went to our producers and were like, this data is kind of weird, but like it really seems like, I know these producers said it wasn't for them, but the data is saying that Americans are liking this. And so our producers, who are kind of cautious, were like, well, this is kind of conflicting. And so they just wanted to get like the opinions of the Americans who were here on the ground, being like, we're hearing one thing, you're kind of telling us another, do you think it could work? And so I love this story, because as with everything with the show, and kind of with any theater, when it comes down to it, the audience decides everything. Like, you can get marketing teams on board, you can get reviewers in, you can spend whatever money you want, but ultimately the only people who make any kind of call are the audience. And they are the ones, because of that American audience base that came to see us, we kind of got that information back to the American producers who came and saw it originally. And we're like, you've got to come back. Like, this is what we're being told. And they did. And they picked up the show. And so, yeah, and now we're on Broadway.
Oh my goodness. I love that story. That is so cool. And it's obviously proving its worth, you know, that's continuing and continuing.
Yeah. And like, and I think it's beautiful. And I think even when we arrived here, again, it's that thing of like, ultimately it will be the audience that decides the fate of the show. And, you know, it's always been a word of mouth show. You know, there's very purposefully, there's actually not very much footage or information really about what's on the stage, what we do, because of, we want people, that the biggest advocate for the show and the biggest kind of precious jewel to us is someone seeing it and then coming out and saying to their friend, I think you'd really like the show, you should come and see this, versus sending them like, you know, but them getting an ad on fucking Insta being like, here's a kind of snippet of a pro shoot. That might work for some people, but nothing is more precious than your someone that you trust being like, I just saw something and we got to go. And like, that's always been how this show has sold.
Yeah, that's so cool. I remember when Connor and I went to London a couple of years ago, we at that point had this podcast. We'd had a bunch of people from the West End on our show, and we kept being like, okay, so what do we see on the West End? What's it to see? And everyone said Operation Mincemeat.
That's true.
It was completely sold out when we were there, by the way. So we were not able to see it. I don't know if you would have been still in it at the time, but I'm curious what that experience on the West End was like versus what the Broadway experience has been.
It's a really good question. I think they were both scary for different reasons. I think when we got to the West End, you have to understand. So like, obviously, as you know, there's five people in the show, and three of the people in the show are the people that wrote it. And the only reason we were ever in it is because we couldn't, the only way we could pay ourselves to do the show was to be in the show. We had no money to write it. We weren't commissioned. There was the only way to pay ourselves to make rent was to cast ourselves in it. So we got an Arts Council grant, and a bit of and some money from the venue to kind of put it on. And so we're like, great, we'll be in it until we get a proper producer and they will take it and they'll put real people in it. And that will be great. And to kind of, and you know, thank God, or you know, whatever you want to say, our producer was like, no, this is the show. You being in it is really important. And it's not about being trained musical theater actors or whatever. But and all of that was lovely whilst you're on the fringe. But I think graduating to the West End, and even more so graduating to Broadway, you are not up against, but up alongside people who are so the masters of every type of performance, particularly in terms of like singing and dancing. And making the jump both times to a West End stage and then to a Broadway stage, we very much a lot of, I think with all three of us, although I don't, you know, I can only talk to myself really, had huge swathes of imposter syndrome of going, you know, we did not audition for these parts. We've not ever auditioned for any of this. We just kind of, we wrote it and we forced ourselves in. And so, yeah, I was very, and particularly when, you know, you play my character has to be the most confident guy in right. the room. He's the master of ceremonies. He hosts the show. And so it's not only confidence, but it is like, it's really portraying someone who owns the room. And I think the first few shows on the West End and on Broadway was a real like sort of lesson in trying to like overcoming sort of mental personal demons to be like, no, we've earned a place here. We've done all we can. And it will be up to the audience to decide kind of whether they have a good time or not. And again, I come back to that thing of what we talked about earlier, which is like, it's a place for a huge myriad of types of show. And like, not everyone is, you know, you don't only go to a theater show because you want to hear a song sung perfectly or someone doing amazing riffing. Like you go because you want to be told a story and that you want to laugh and cry. And so it really was like every single time it's been heartening to me to be like, audiences want to be generous. They want to have a good time and they want to kind of go with you. And that, you know, if someone's sitting there going, I think, you know, if every note isn't perfect, I'm not going to enjoy it, then go see something else and that's fine.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I'm curious about how you ended up playing Monty. I mean, it's such an amazing part. I think anyone would dream of taking on that kind of a role, but I guess this might be about just your writing process in general with your co-writers, but how did you all end up in the respective roles that you ended up in?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we knew we wanted to be five people. We knew it was probably going to be a majority female cast because there were two of us, so the writers were female and the other performer was male, even though the other writer was not on stage with us.
Felix, right?
Felix, yes. He's the final sort of the fourth writer, but he isn't on stage with us. He is not an actor, but he has a band.
Yes. Is he in New York with you guys or is he?
No, okay. He's not. He's in England. He has two kids. So he has to look after the children. Sorry about that, Felix.
Oh.
But I think he likes his children, if that's any consolation to him.
Good.
Yeah, I think it's good for him. Yeah. but it was a story full of men. You know, it was MI5 in the 40s. Like the women didn't really have a lot to do. And so we really wanted to investigate that and like kind of talk about that, but without it ever feeling kind of preachy. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, there's a great tradition in theatre, which is show, not tell. Like if you can show something, it's much better than kind of preaching at an audience for 2 hours. And so we wanted to give across a message, which was, isn't it interesting that women were not given jobs of responsibility when they are just as capable and have always been just as capable as the men in the roles? Well, the best way to do that is to just have the main man be played by a woman and just pull off this performance as well as any sort of showman can do. And so we wanted to do that. And then on the flip side of that, Hester, obviously the sort of most important female character, is played, for those who don't know, is played by a man, Jack Malone, who just won the Tony for best supporting actor. Well done, Jack. And similarly, we talked a lot about how traditional roles in musical theatre and how it's not that often that a man gets to stand on a stage and demonstrate vulnerability that is not also moved to violence or to anger. And we wanted to have a male presenting body, even though he is playing a woman, kind of give him the space and give him a song and many scenes that allow a male presenting body to be fully, fully vulnerable, sorrowful, filled with love and grief without that moving to action. In a lot of cases, if a man is upset or feels wronged or feels like something is unjust, what happens next is he goes and does something about it. You know, it's a call to action, or he fights, or he gets the girl or whatever. And for many of us, not just women, but any minority, that is not an option. You can't, if you're sad about something, if something is wrong in your life, you can't just be like, well, I'll go and fix it, because the structures around you do not allow many people that privilege. And a lot of times what you, all you can do is kind of sit in your own sadness and your, in your own hurt. And we wanted to have a, yeah, a male body present that reality on the stage. So that's kind of why we, yeah, Jack got to play Hester and I was playing Montague, because at some point we had, yeah, many conversations around, was I going to play Hester? And was, I think it was very strange that, but yeah, I'm super happy that we landed on that. Even if it does mean that Jack got a Tony out of it, which obviously I'm furious about.
You'll get him next time. I know it.
Have you ever done a version of Dear Bill? Like, is it out there?
Well, actually the first time it ever was performed, I performed it. Which thankfully there is no recordings, but we know we this is before Jack came on board. We had written this song and we were in Manchester, where I'm from, and we did like a scratch performance. It was at the top of a different show. They just had this program where if you were going to see a musical, you had you listened to a couple of minutes for a different musical at the top, just so they could experiment, which is a really cool idea.
That's cool, yeah.
And so we had two songs that we had written. We had God That's Brilliant and we had Dear Bill. And we were very green. We didn't really know what we had or whether it was good, but we knew we had these minutes. Well, that's fine. Well, so we did God That's Brilliant and that went down fine. And then we had this new song, this very long solo called Dear Bill. And we were like, oh, it's very long and we don't know if it's much good. So we'll do it. And so Felix played the piano and I sang it. And at the very end, I finished the song, we didn't say anything for anyone. And there was absolute silence. I remember exactly where I was standing in this. It was like a 100-seater studio theater in Manchester. And I remember thinking in the silence, oh, fuck. they just think it's really boring, or they think it's really long. And then I realized that basically everyone was just like, just absolutely devastated. And people started clapping. And then we were like, that was kind of the first moment that we were like, oh, I think we might have something with this song. This might be, you know, and from that moment, we were like, we really wanted to safeguard it and make sure it went to the right person at the right moment in the show, which obviously started off all the conversations that we're just talking about
right,
who should perform it, what gender, and how we can kind of get the most out of this song that was really important to make sure that we did, that we honored the sacrifice and the true pain and bravery of the people who lived through this terrible war.
Wow. I mean, and it's such an amazing song. The entire score is amazing. And
thank you.
You really cover so many different types of musical theater songs in it, which is so impressive. I mean, I was not bored for one second, and it's so re-listenable too, as
thank
we were saying
you
earlier.
I think all the best, all our favorite scores for sure. But I think particularly with comedy, like we listen to a lot of, you know, Legally Blonde and South Park, Big Alone, Drunk Cut and Book of Mormon and The Producers. And I think those musicals do an amazing job of fitting whatever your moment needs to the musical stylings. The style of music is wrapped up in the moment that you're creating, rather than it being like it's sort of a wash of one sort of type of music. And so that was definitely like a really important factor for us. Also, just like we were having so much fun. This story was so fun. Like, and I think also because it's our first musical, we were very much like just like we're kids with the crayons, just like drawing all over the thing and just trying to grabbing everything we could to kind of to work out for ourselves what kind of music we could write.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I love that you mentioned Legally Blonde, because they do, you both do a good job.
I was just gonna say,
moving the story along while also including a lot of information. And
honestly, I mean, obviously everyone loves Legally Blonde, but I just still don't think people love Legally Blonde enough.
Agreed. Agreed.
That first number, the two numbers in particular that we studied were Hello from Book of Mormon and Oh My God, You Guys from Legally Blonde. But we're trying to figure out the opening of our show. We'd written like three different openings and they weren't, we performed them all and we were like three runs in and it wasn't working really. And then we just like sat down with like literally like markers and post-its with Oh My God, You Guys, and be like, right, we're going to section out this entire song and figure out how they have done this, because it is a masterclass in like plot, character, like tone, setting. It's amazing. Hello is the same. So no, I am completely with you. I just think it's such an important show.
It is.
I'm curious about, when did Operation Mincemeat sort of lock into place? You know, you mentioned it was at the Fringe and then obviously you moved to the West End eventually. Is the version we're seeing on Broadway the same version that was presented in the West End?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, there's literally like a couple of lines changed just to kind of clarity, and the finale is glitzier because everything's
Worst.
bigger on Broadway.
I have to tell you, actually, Dylan texted me at intermission. He said, "Now I just want to warn you, I did sob at the Megamix finale."
No shame, no shame, by the way.
Hey, that's
Yeah.
why we wrote it that way. That's why we wrote it.
It got me hyped. It got me emotional. It got me feeling, oh my God, I love the theater. You really did that.
I'm
You
so
really did
glad. No,
that.
I think like it's my favorite like joke in the show, and I get to be in such a good position because like again, kind of no huge spoilers, but like you know the curtain comes down when you think you've seen everything the show has to offer, and then I get to come out, do a little kind of show mini bit, and then when the curtain comes up and the audience sees what has changed, I just get to see the audience's reaction. It's almost like watching the groom at a wedding, you know, like everyone else is looking
Oh.
at the bride, and I just get to look at the audience being like, "Oh my God!" And like it's so nice because like if you know, in terms of actual Broadway spectacle, there are many other shows that have 10 times the spectacle of that moment. But I think because you've been on this journey with us in this small set where we've kind of been working our asses off to transform desks and chairs into, you know, into all these different scenarios to kind of give you the kind of gift of the final sort of 10 minutes of the show. It's always my favorite bit to perform, the
Oh,
finale. I love it.
it's
So
perfect.
good.
Thank you for your hard work on that. I mean, that is just so
Thank
magical.
you.
You seem like a true student of theater, the arts. I want to go back a little bit and just talk about your beginnings with when maybe you fell in love with theater for the first time. We base this question from Fun Home. There's the song Ring of Keys, where there was a moment of recognition. Do you feel like you had a moment of seeing yourself or passion in the
You
arts?
know what? I absolutely do. And it's funny we talk about Legally Blonde. My answer is not Legally Blonde, but so I'd been at university for, I can't remember if it's like a year or a couple of years, and I'd been in a couple of musicals and I'd enjoyed them, but I hadn't really like clicked into it. I think I'd been in A Chorus Line, which was really great, but like I was kind of like it wasn't my heart. I was like, this is a really interesting show, but great. It didn't make me think I've got to go in be in the theater. And then I went to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which is this amazing arts festival, and got told there was a show on. It was like an 11 p.m. show, this tiny little venue. It's quite rare for a musical to be on at 11 p.m. But they were like, it's meant to be really funny. Go and see this sort of grotty show. And I was like, fine, I'll go do that. And the musical that we saw that night was Bat Boy.
Oh my God.
And my head came fully off and landed and bounced around my feet. I just couldn't believe what I was watching. I couldn't believe that it was as funny or as gory or as fucked up as it was. The fact that I was like, you know, a couple of drinks in, there was maybe like 50 people in the audience. It was like it'd been built that night specifically for me and my friends to watch it. I was thinking about it this morning actually, and like, and in terms of openings, it's just such an audaciously stupid musical. The fact that the people behind that, obviously Laurence O'Keefe, went on to write Legally Blonde, are unbelievably talented at this art form. And their opening number is just a song that goes, "Hold me, bad boy, touch me, bad boy." Totally irrelevant, completely irrelevant of the plot. Like, and the fact
No.
that that went all the way, and they were like, no, the opening number's got to be just the phrase, "Hold me, bat boy, touch me, bat boy," basically over and over again. Like, it was such a indulgently stupid way to open a show that I was like, this is so important. This is what I want to do. And the audience was so happy. The story was so stupid. Yeah, so that was definitely for me, that was my Ring of Keys moment of like, up until now, it's been like hazy shapes and like I loved comedy and but I didn't really love stand up. I liked sketch comedy, but I couldn't. Sketch comedy didn't quite have like the rigor and like the nerdiness that I really loved in storytelling. And then I watched Bat Boy and I was like, there's the rest of my life.
I love it. I mean, you are so funny, and your comedic timing is just beyond. Even on your Instagram, you post these funny videos. And I have to say, when I was watching Operation Mincemeat, I'm so impressed with your voice that you
Oh yes,
use
my
when you're
lower,
playing Monty.
my Montague voice, yes.
Yeah, you just nail the timing with it and everything. How did you find that voice? And do you find that it's affected your voice overall to put that on every night?
I don't think it has. I think I. You know what's funny is that voice was never a choice that I consciously made. And I think actually what's happened is like over the years, I think it's just gotten slightly lower and lower and lower until it's sort of around here. It was on the West End that people after the show would start asking me, babe, is your voice okay? Like, and I was like, you know, I've done this for many years now. Like, it's absolutely fine. It truly is. I'm aware that it's not a thing that's like a normal thing to do. And I think when people come in as my understudy or come over to take over the role, I have to be like very much like, please do not believe that you have to do this voice. Like, it, the character will work without me sort of, you know, husking around in the background there. But no, it's, and I have no idea what else I can use it for. As soon as I leave the show, it will be a redundant skill until I'm cast as Beetlejuice, of course, and then it'll really come into its own.
Oh, which, hey, now
that's happening. That is happening, by the way. You will be.
That's true.
You absolutely will.
You heard it first. That's the drama. That's the tea. I shouldn't have revealed it, but I am going to be.
Beetlejuice coming back to Broadway this fall.
I know. I'm so excited. I've never seen it.
Oh my God. Well, you've got the voice down. So.
I've got the voice. Exactly. I don't need to learn. I'll just tell it up on the day. I'll wear the black and white suit. They're like, yes. How hard can it be? No, I'm super stoked. I think it's gonna be really up my street, that show.
Oh yeah. Now, when you were, you know, going to the Fringe or, you know, studying theater, were you studying to be a performer? Were you studying writing? Like, what was sort of your track?
Yeah. Well, I've never actually studied performance. I've never studied theater. I did English literature, and so did my collaborators, David Cumming and Zoe Roberts. We were all at university together, all of us studying English literature, but we were doing lots of little plays and stupid things on the side because it was a university that was sort of known for a good extracurricular drama scene. It was the University of Warwick. And so when we came out of university, because all of us have like normal, you know, parents who are like, you've got to get a job. Like, you know, this is cute what you're doing. Get a fucking job. And so we did, we got jobs, but the sort of the theater itch just wouldn't go away. So we started making sort of comedy shows, which you read out many of in beautiful tones at the start of this episode. He had Hairy Hands being a highlight. And we made these comedy theater shows as this company Kill the Beast with two other guys that I met at university, the five of us together. And it was very much the seeds of this. It was five of us, four of us on stage, lots of wigs, lots of hats, lots of, you know, running around. It was always very cinematic. We were always very inspired by films and TV series, just as much as we were sort of theater productions. You know, it was, we did like buddy cop shows and things like that. David then went on to drama school. He did a year at drama school. So he'll kill me if I tell, say he's not trained. So David is trained. David, you're trained. And Claire and Jack, of course, who round up the cast, they are proper actors. So they are also trained. But I think it's like, but I like to talk about it because I think, you know, we get a lot of teens and young people and not young people at stage door being like, how do I get to do this? And like, oh, I'm applying for drama school and what do you think? Or I'm going to go do a course in this and la la la. And like, do you think that's a good route? And oh, I really hate giving advice because I think it's for this industry, it's like someone who won the fucking lottery, someone saying, how did you do that? And being like, well, I picked a right ticket. And like, obviously there's lots of work and talent involved as well. I think at least what we can do is kind of demonstrate that the route of go to drama school, get an agent, get an audition, get a part, a route that is so out of the control of the person at the center of it, first of all, is not for everyone and doesn't need to be for everyone. If you're someone who wants to have control over your life or that loves getting in rooms and telling stories, actually that might not be the best route for you to do that. So yeah, I'd like to try and fly the flag for, you know, a different way of entering this crazy industry.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. I appreciate you speaking to that because I think there are so many people who think, oh, you go to this school and you'll immediately end up on Broadway. But, you know, who can say?
No.
Wait, okay, University of Warwick. Is this where the Warwick Rowers are from?
Yes.
Oh, I know all about that. I've had a calendar or two, Natasha.
Just a couple. Hey, you know, you're supporting education and we thank you for that. We thank you for that service. Absolutely.
This university has given us so much. I mean, wow, all these distinguished alumni.
So between like writing, performing, producing, all of it, which aspect of the arts fills you up the most creatively and personally?
It's a great question. I think going to see weird little fringe comedy is the best thing in the world because I think possibly because it's such a risk. Like, there is nothing worse than bad comedy. It is the worst. Like, yeah, when you sit down in your seat and you're like 10 minutes in, you're like, I'm trapped and there's seven other people here and we have to just be like, it's terrible. But the roll of the dice when you're like one of the first people to be there and like click in with a performer or a performers who are like on the same wavelength. I think there's just something about comedy and laughter, guys. You've heard of laughter? It's great stuff. But like, it's just, it just makes you be like, oh, you're my soul people. Like for me, there is nothing else than comedy to be like, oh, we understand the world together in a way that for me anyway, it's what, you know, it's the pursuit of my whole life's pursuit is comedy really. There's other stuff around that. And I think, and that's not for everyone, but anything that can make me laugh. And I laugh all the time. I'm a very, one of my friends once told me, like, making you laugh is nothing. You laugh at everything. I'm like, well, that's a nice way to be, okay? But I think there's a lot of people in comedy who don't feel that way, but a lot of people in comedy who it's quite hard to make laugh, but that's a sad way to live. So I think that, like, just discovering someone who either you know or you don't know, who doing something to make you laugh, particularly when you're with your friends and you, like, grab your friend and you're like, this is really funny. And be like, I know, it's really great. Like, because... there's nothing better in the world than saying an in-joke to your friend and your friend being like, yeah, that was a good moment. Oh. And then, like, I just love watching telly. It's like the other end of the spectrum completely. Like, bowl of pasta, the day is done, Netflix, a comfort show, Parks and Recreation, 30 Rock, Peep Show, Friends, The Office, being like, these people have created a perfect thing, and that my only job now is to worship. I feel it's like a type of prayer. I honestly feel like that you have your worshiping bowl, you eat your pasta, and you just like listen to the old gods speak their wisdom and their truth, and it fills me with like an immense amount of cosmic calm.
Oh, beautiful. I love it, and you're in good hands too. You know, especially if you've seen it before, you can just trust that it's going to be something you're going to click with and laugh at and be surprised by.
I think there's a lot of like people, obviously, you know, you should be watching new stuff. Of course. And that's one of my first thing, you know, but like there is something about knowing something so well and being like, I can trace, it's like knowing a person really well. Like, you know, every like touch of their skin, whatever. And like me watching The American Office until Michael leaves, in which case then I don't watch after that. Sorry guys, but I don't. Just being like, this is what can happen when people who are talented in a group just like work together and create a thing that is so close to perfection, it might as well be perfection. I think also because like I'm very drawn to group things. I'm drawn, obviously, you know, I'm very much a collaborator, and I love being in a gang. And things that have been clearly created by and are for and full of a gang of people all sort of moving around and reacting to each other and are constantly in a state of alertness for the goodness of everyone else on the set, on the stage with them. That's my whole heart. So yeah, it doesn't get better than that for me.
I'd love to hear that. Okay, so this is the question you're never supposed to ask an actor, right, or anything like that, though, but I'm curious.
Have I killed anyone?
Right.
The answer is yes.
The idea of what's next, particularly as you're writing, you know, the four of you.
Yeah.
Are you all in a group text tossing around ideas? Is there that thought even right now, or...
I think like there's definitely a group chat full of ideas, many of which sort of go into silence and you're like, hey guys, what about, and then you're like, it's like, okay, it's not gonna fly, that's right, fine, right. Don't worry about that. No, we have miraculously managed to stay friends during this process, not all the time, but sure. I think that's important to talk about as well. Like, your collaborators are your best friends in the world, they're your family, and like your family, they drive you up the fucking wall. You occasionally have to have a sit down with a truth stick and being like, This is why my feelings were hurt when you said that thing when we were in Pret-a-Manger. Here's your talking stick, you get to say it. But I think we have such a solid foundation as friends of, you know, from university for many years. It's going to be hard to get rid of each other. So I think we definitely want to make another stage show together. But this has been such a huge, immensely long process. I think we're gonna take a bit of time really making sure that we land on the right idea. I feel like I had no... Looking back now, the fact that, you know, in terms of how this came about, I listened to a podcast and was just like, this is it, guys. And they all just went, yeah, great. And like, it's kind of amazing that that has turned out the way it has. And maybe, you know, and who knows, maybe that will happen again. It might just be that we listen to something, or Bob listens to something or sees something and just goes, that's what it is. But I think the key thing about it is that all of us agree. Mm-hmm. Everyone has to be on board from the start, because it's such a hard, punishing process. And if you're not all fully like game for it from the very beginning, if one person's, we have this, it's a thing that I think weirdly Bono, unfortunately, was the one who said it, and I'm sure he may got off someone else, but it's just a deeply uncool reference, was that like in U2, if there was ever like a they were playing a song to each other or rehearsing, whatever, however many members of the U2 there are, I can't remember, if even one person was like, something's not right about this, that was an universal vote. That instantly meant that the thing that they were doing was not right, and they had to work through it. And we try and do the same thing with our company, in that if one person believes something is wrong, then there is something wrong. And it might not be the thing that they think that's wrong. It might be that we've come to the right conclusion, but in the wrong way. But like, if that happens, everyone has to down tools, and we have to figure it out so that everyone is back sort of happy again. And that's really fucking frustrating and
sure.
really hard,
oh.
particularly if you're the person who's like, it's fine. It's fine. Please, can we go home? But you have to, yeah, that's all part of it. And that's why, you know, collaboration is the best and worst thing in the world, because you your own opinion is only, you know, as important as everyone else's. But I think it does make you better, less insane people in the long run.
Oh, yes. That's so interesting. Wow.
It sounds like you guys have very healthy communication styles. That's great.
I think most of the time, I think so. But I'm getting like, I'm sure like you guys know each other. You've met before, your brothers.
Yeah.
And, but like, you know, I'm sure it's the same with any, like you work together and your family members, and like that must come with its own myriad, like beautiful things and issue things. I'm not trying to throw you under the bus.
No,
but like, you know, I'm just saying you know what it is, you know what it's like.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. As you were speaking, it was resonating with me, everything you were saying, honestly.
Dylan, what are you talking about? Do we need to discuss something after this?
Later.
We'll have a chat after this. Yeah, exactly. But like you have that backbone of knowing like ultimately everyone is working towards the thing that you're making being good.
Yes.
And that everyone has faith that the other people are saying these things not out of ego, but out of a genuine desire to make the thing that you're doing better. I think if there was ever, I think the reason I get on with the three other guys so well, and the reason that we work together, is because I wholeheartedly believe that at no point ever would any of them try and over tip the apple cart just because they fucking felt like it,
yeah.
or because they want their idea to go in and not my idea. Like it comes from a true like nerdy desire to make the best thing happen. And even though it's immensely frustrating and you can sit there being like, but I know I'm right about this and you're wrong and it's doing my head in. You know, that's not the point. The point is to kind of, you have to reach a kind of green light together.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh. We have so many things we want to talk about with you, but we're sadly running out of time. So we've got to move on to our closing segment here, Dose of Drama. This is where we share that piece of pop culture, that drama per se, that's mm-hmm. in our minds or on our hearts. That show you've been binging, book you've been reading. It could be that podcast that turns into that, you know, Tony nominated musical.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
Anything at all. Anything at all. Dylan, do you want to kick us off today with your dose of drama?
Yes, Tosh, it's so funny you said 30 Rock, because that has been on my mind. Connor and his cousin literally texted us the other day. He's like, I need to rewatch it again. I'm still making my way through it. For the first time, but for the first time. And how magical. That's why I'm not rushing. That's
Goodness.
Why I'm not pushing.
No,
you know?
You mustn't.
What I love about it is I can't be on my phone because I'll miss a joke.
Yeah.
You cannot have
so
the two
fast.
Screens. It's so fast. And I'm not a huge Alec Baldwin fan now, but there's something about
since
him.
Since he killed a guy.
Well, yes. There you go. But now, but back then, you know, there's something about him that just
oh,
really
so funny.
Nailed
it. And just so weirdly hot.
Weird, yes.
Before he killed a person.
Right. Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
But no, he's I fully
absolutely
endorse.
And Tina and Jane, everybody. It's just brilliant, perfect cast. So that's my dose of drama. Everyone should watch it for the first time or give it a rewatch, like Natasha does sometimes at night with a bowl of pasta. Connor, do you have a dose of drama?
I have so much drama that I've been consuming and thinking about lately. So I suppose I'll just say I cannot stop listening to Haim's new album, I Quit. It is so good. It's almost an hour long, which is kind of rare for a pop album these days. I'm obsessed with it.
I love those girls.
It's incredible. They are beyond. Do you say Haim or Haim? Well, I guess with your accent, it might be different.
Haim. Yeah.
It's Haim.
It's Haim. We can make that call.
The Cleveland. Yeah. My Clevelander is like Haim. I know. Oh, I've been doing it now. Haim. But love this album and highly recommend everybody go listen to it. I can't stop. Tosh, do you have a dose of drama?
I do. I actually write a Substack, which is like just pushing my own thing here, but like it's sort of tangential to that. And in my Substack, I recommend like books and stuff. And I've been looking for the song of the summer because I feel like we haven't yet to really discover. There's not like one single track that I've been like, this is the bop. Like last year, it was Chapel Roan, her whole album, end to end, no skips.
Yeah.
Everything. So I've been like trying to like get opinions and stuff about like artists of the summer, and I came across this woman called Ivory Lane, Layne, Ivory Lane, and she is an independent musician. She's American, and her music is just incredible. She has a recent song called ASMR, which stands for Art Should Make Rent, and it's about her journey as an independent musician, being like she was signed super young and then she kind of got ditched, and like it's just like poppy and hot, like really bouncy, like so many musical influences, and I just think she needs to blow up. So, and she's got an EP coming out tomorrow, I believe. Like, that's like I've never
on
met
the promo
this
team.
I don't know. I'm on the promo team. But yeah, Ivory Layne. I just think she is. I think she needs to like explode because she does it all herself. And I, you know, I love a girly who does it all herself for obvious reasons. So yeah, I think she is my artist of the summer. Go and listen to her. And also, one minor thing, I'm obsessed with cults. I'm obsessed with cults. And I'm listening to this podcast at the moment, which is really good, called Good Cult. I've got it up
I've
here.
heard
Yeah,
of this.
here it
People
is.
love it.
Oh man, Good Cult. There
Okay.
it is.
I love cult stuff too. What is it like each episode's a different one they focus on?
It's a guy who grew up in a kind of community. It's always the best when it's the guys who
Oh
grew up
yeah.
in the community as well. And it's like this self-help seminar thing. And it's like, it's kind of like a, it's one of the more gentle ones. It's more like better yourself, not like let's tattoo man's, initials and then we
Yeah,
fuck him
yeah.
type thing. But even so,
Nexium,
it's Nyxium. God bless
yeah.
Nyxium. Obviously, I've watched everything about
Well,
Nyxium as well.
yes.
I'm
Yeah.
obsessed, my God. But it's just, it's really like, it's like gentle cult listening, if that's kind of your bag, which it very much is mine. But yeah, it's just, I just, it's all about, yeah, how our minds can be corrupted and how, like, why as human beings we're just so desperate for someone to give us the answer. And the narrator, the guy who's in it, is like really like fair and balanced. And yeah, I'm enjoying it very much.
Oh, that sounds
Sounds really
right
good.
up my street. That's so
It does,
cool. Oh my
Dylan.
God, I know. I
Oh,
mean, Connor's in a cult. He rides at SoulCycle, so he can probably relate to that
yes,
as
yes,
well, you know.
yes. Soul Cycle and Improv, the
Right.
two non-cult cults.
Exactly. Exactly.
I've never been to one, but it feels like it's like when you like stand up, right? It's like, no,
Yeah.
to
Yeah.
the
Oh my God.
sun.
Well, listen, it has been such a delight to get to know you and have you on our show. We, if you couldn't tell, are obsessed with you. So thank you. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, this has been so lovely. Well, thank you for having me and thank you for choosing me. Hope I've
Of course, we will always choose you, Natasha.
I'm now in your cult, so it's all of us
Oh,
together.
yeah, we call the drama family, so you're part of it. Now, everyone can, of course, follow you on Instagram and Substack. We'll be sure to include all
Yeah,
of
the
that below.
handles.
What is your Instagram handle?
It's Tash Hodge. So
Okay.
Tashhodge. Tash Hodge.
I love
Yeah.
how you say
I
H
know
for
H is great.
H.
Hodge.
Hodge,
Yeah,
yeah. No, it's so
Hodge.
cute. I love it.
Us British are so cute. We're the cutest little colonizers you're ever going to meet.
Oh my gosh. Well, everyone is following Tosh. They should be following us. We're at the Drama Podcast. Connor's at Connor McDowell. I am at Dylan McDowell. Go see Operation Mincemeat, everybody. And Connor, I will see you next time. Drama.